I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to discuss the state of the arts in central Indiana. We will look at what artists and arts organizations need to thrive here in the Hoosier State, and what the challenges confronting both are. We will talk about all of this with Lewis Rickey of the Indiana Arts Commission, Dave Lawrence of the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Carol Baker of Carmel Center for the Performing Arts, and you. You can join the conversation by calling toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. Please do join the conversation. But first, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about the arts in central Indiana today, and we're fortunate to have as our guests Dave Lawrence, President and CEO, Arts Council of Indianapolis. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. Carol Baker, who is Director of Educational Outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel.
Hello.
Carol, good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, glad to have you here. And joining us by phone from Bloomington is Lewis Rickey, Executive Director of the Indiana Arts Commission. Lewis, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us, and I think you showed uncommon sense by not braving the roads all the way up from Bloomington today. Good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here, and thanks for taking me online this way. I'm a little straining to hear you guys, so if your engineer could boost me a little bit, that would be great.
I think we're working on that right now.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. While they're doing that, what I'm going to do is we're going to start the program. The arts, one of those things everybody talks about and doesn't. They have different definitions of what it should be and also how all of the pieces come together. So I think I'll start with Dave Lawrence. Dave, could you talk a little bit about what the Arts Arts Council of Indianapolis is, what your mission is, who all is involved, so that we start understanding who the players are here.
Absolutely. The mission of the Arts Council of Indianapolis is to build financial support and widespread appreciation for meaningful engagement in the arts. I think the easiest way to look at the Arts Council is think of us as a chamber of commerce for the arts. So everything that we do is to support artists and arts organizations. We have a number of professional development workshops we offer to artists to help them become better business owners, if you will. We work through granting programs for both artists and arts organizations. We also do many programs with the city's public art program. We're involved in the cultural tourism initiative. We also own and operate the Indianapolis Arts Garden that's attached to Circle Center Mall. So we offer 300 free performances every year that include, you know, music, dance, theater performances, spoken word, and we also work with many of our partners in the city on the Cultural Development Commission and efforts at raising cultural tourism in central Indiana.
And how large is your budget, if I might ask?
Right now, we're at $3 million.
Annually?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Carol Baker, what is the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel? I think a lot of people know about it, but maybe you can clear up some misconceptions.
All right. The Center for the Performing Arts is located in Carmel, Indiana, and is currently under construction. And later in January, we will be opening our first space of three spaces in the center itself, the first one being the Palladium, which is a concert hall seating about 1,600 seats. Later in March, we'll be opening the studio space, about 200 seats in that performing space. And then the Tarkington Theater, which is a proscenium hall seating about 500 patrons. Now, it's an exciting opportunity for Carmel as well as for the region and central Indiana, as we will be creating a home for many smaller arts organizations. To have a place of their own is something that is just so special and so unique because, of course, there's no place like home. And so we'll be the home of the Civic Theater, the Carmel Symphony Orchestra, and many other arts organizations here in the region. We'll also be bringing international and national high-quality artists to our facility for the general public.
Louis Rickey. Have we resolved the sound
I'm
issue?
I'm doing better.
Okay, good. Could you talk a little bit about what the Indiana Arts Commission is and what its mission is?
Well, of course, we are the state agency for the arts here in Indiana. We are an executive agency of the state of Indiana, and we are responsible for connecting the public in Indiana to the arts every day, and we take appropriated money from the state legislature as well as federal appropriated money create public benefit with that in the state to help the public connect in all ways to the arts. And we're involved in all the aspects of the arts, all the different disciplines. We have a regional system here in the state where we have partners in 10 regions at the moment of the state, whereby they help us make grants and provide services to arts organizations and to artists and to patrons throughout the state. We also have partnerships with entities like Indiana University, where we have Traditional Arts Indiana, which helps to promote the traditional arts in the state, and many like things. We see ourselves as the entity that tries to undergird the effort for the arts in our state, and to connect people and organizations together to create benefit.
Could you offer a quick definition of what the traditional arts are?
Sure. Traditional arts are crafts and things that are ingrained in the culture of our state. So it could be something like quilt making or fishing net making or carving or a lot of things that you would see as not a fine art or not even a fine craft, but more embedded in the history of our state and traditions.
And I'd like to ask real quickly, you mentioned that that there's an appropriation from the state legislature and also federal money. How large is the budget for the Indiana Arts Commission?
Our current budget is right at $4 million a year.
So just slightly larger than the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Are the two of you the major players when it comes to funding for the arts in the state, or who would be?
Well, I think we are part
Dave Lawrence
of a.
Is talking.
Thank you. We
Thanks.
Are a part of many foundations and corporations that fund the arts throughout the state. Obviously, one of the largest contributors to arts organizations statewide is the Lilly Endowment. Mm-hmm. We're so thankful to have them here in central Indiana, and they have such a wonderful history of support of the arts and all aspects of our community. The Central Indiana Community Foundation is another large funder of the arts, as well as the Crystal DeHaan Family Foundation and Nina Mason Pulliam Charitable Trust. There's a lot of organizations on the foundation level that are supporting arts and cultural organizations as well, and we're very grateful for their involvement in our community as well.
Louis Rickey, Executive Director of the Indiana Arts Commission. That breakdown of the $4 million budget, how much of that is state money and how much of that is federal money?
There's currently about a dollar of federal money for every $3 of state money. So about $3 million in the state realm and about $1 million in the federal realm. That's rough numbers, rounded numbers.
And I've got a question for I think I'll throw it out to all three of you here and see who wants it first. But in terms of funding or supporting the arts, how do you go about the process of determining which artist or prioritizing? I'm presuming that there is a much greater demand for your support, your services, even the display space at the Arts Garden than you can possibly meet. How do you make those decisions? And I'll start first with Dave Lawrence.
We run a number of grant programs. we reallocate $1.3 million to arts and cultural organizations. This is through appropriation from the city of Indianapolis. And Mayor Greg Ballard makes that amount available to us. And it's then it goes through the city council process. And we were fortunate this year to get an increase in funding for the first time in probably 6 or 7 years. And that is due in a large part to Mayor Ballard's belief in the arts, the city council's understanding of the arts as an economic driver for our community, and a lot of work on behalf of the board and staff of the Arts Council and advocates both in Indianapolis and statewide. So that $1.3 million that we grant in organizational grants and also then fellowship opportunities through the Creative Renewal Arts Fellowship Program, which we can talk about in a bit, and also a Beckman Fellowship, we use a panel process to determine who gets the money. Mm-hmm. And for the Arts Council, we rely on out-of-state panelists. We bring in folks from all over the country with arts expertise to help us make these decisions so that we are eliminating conflicts of interest and so that they are looking at these grants with fresh eyes. These are folks that have a wide range of knowledge about the arts and bring a lot of best practices to Indianapolis and have a real firm understanding of what like organizations are nationwide and how they should be operating for our community. So we use we bring the panelists here to Indianapolis then for public panels, and the public is able to be there and hear the panel comments, and then those panelists' comments and scores are used to determine the funding amount for our organizations each year.
And what criteria do they use? How do they? Are they given a set of criteria, or is it an open-ended process?
There is a very set set of criteria for our organizational grants in four areas: administration, artistic excellence, arts education, and also then community outreach. They're slightly different than for our fellowship programs because we're dealing with individual artists and performers at that point. So, but those are all clearly outlined in our grant application materials.
Louis Rickey, how do you make the determination? How does the Indiana Arts Commission?
Well, it's a very, very similar process to today's process, actually. We have several granting categories. We have operational grants for arts organizations, so it's largely unrestricted money that would be granted to arts organizations for their basic operations, and we think this is important in the state because most grants are project oriented or program oriented grants, and ours are somewhat more unrestricted for operations. We also do give project grants as well, and we give individual artist grants as well. Like Dave's process, we rely on panels who make recommendations to the commission who review the grant applications. But a little bit unlike Dave, most of our panels are made up of citizens within the state, although we do have some folks from outside the state, depending on the category of the type of grant that's being reviewed. So, you know, part of our philosophy is to put the decision-making of where the grants go in the hands of the citizens which are served by those grants. And very much like Dave's process is also, our grant applications are, the criteria are in four categories. It's in quality, in management, in education, and in public benefit. So they're almost identical to the categories that Dave uses as well. Those grants for the Arts Commission, we have grant categories which happen either on an annual basis or some of them on a biannual basis, depending on what kind of grant it is.
We are talking about the state of the arts in central Indiana, and you're listening to No Limits. I'm John Krall. We're talking with Louis Rickey, Executive Director of the Indiana Arts Commission, Dave Lawrence, President and CEO, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Carol Baker, who is Director of Educational Outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, Indiana. I'd like to invite our listeners at this time call us and join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us a question via email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send comments or questions via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. We're talking about the arts. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, presenting Handel's Christmas classic Messiah, December 18th at Clues Memorial Hall. Tickets at 639-4300 or indianapolissymphony.org. And by the Indiana Historical Society, presenting part three of its town hall series, Indiana's Rural Environment, at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center, Thursday, December 16th, today, open to the public, details at indianahistory.org, and by Ice Miller, Indiana Week in Review, weekly listener and viewer poll. Listen every week for a new question and results from last week's poll. Find out how to participate at wfyi.org/iwir. WFYI Radio is streaming online. Listen in at wfyi.org/radio. You can check out both our HD1 and HD2 broadcast. That's at wfyi.org/radio. You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI.
Good afternoon. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host for No Limits. We are talking today about the state of the arts in central Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guests Louis Rickey, executive director of the Indiana Arts Commission, Dave Lawrence, president and CEO, Arts Council of Indianapolis, Carol Baker, who is the director of educational outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. We've talked a bit about funding and funding opportunities for arts and artists. I remember a few years ago hearing Salman Rushdie speak at Butler University for their writers series, and somebody asked him about things that were good and bad for artists, and Rushdie said, "Well, let me simplify this for you." He says, "Alcohol, bad for writers. Drugs, bad for artists." Then he says, "Money, good for artists." And that seemed to be his argument, that to sustain your art, you needed some sort of financial support. Do you agree with, if not the first two points, we won't get into the personal habits of artists. Is that the primary challenge right now, to make the arts an even more thriving concern here in the state of Indiana, or are there other challenges out there?
I think,
Dave Lawrence.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. I think it's one of the primary challenges. Funding, obviously, with the economy in the state that it's been in the last few years, there aren't a lot of sources out there to begin with for specifically individual artists support grants. That's why it's so great that the Arts Commission has their program, and we're fortunate enough to have several fellowship programs as well. But in addition to money, I think visibility is another key challenge for both artists and arts organizations.
Could you define visibility?
Sure. I think rising above the clutter that's out there, just in terms of you've got so many things, the internet taking people's times, schedules are getting tighter and tighter, and with TV and movies and everything, just trying to rise above all of sort of the media clatter sometimes to help folks understand the importance of this artist and their work. You know, if they think about that they're getting grants to create their work, there's not a lot of money then left over to promote their work. And so that's where organizations like the Arts Council and the Indiana Arts Commission are important, to help raise that visibility for artists. So we try to do both visibility and money for artists. And I think right now in our community, those are two of the biggest problems that we're seeing with or challenges that artists are facing.
Carol Baker of the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, clearly, I mean, your organization felt that there was a need for another venue, another outlet, really, for the performing arts here in central Indiana. Could you talk about what the motivation was there, what need that your organization saw that it was filling?
Well, the center came out of a vision that happened maybe that was created back 15 years ago, and it's only now coming to fruition. And that's, it takes a while to pull the funding, to sell the vision to a lot of other folks. But we should note that it started with a vision. It started with an idea. And that idea has been nurtured over time. And now we have this incredible hall in you know, as part of this whole redevelopment of Carmel, you know, a number of years ago, there was the creation and development of the Arts and Design District there on Main Street. And if you haven't been up to Carmel in a long while, I invite you to come up there because it is changing. It is changing daily. I've only been with the center for now 3 weeks, and there was a structure on the corner of one of the major streets there that's now gone, making way for new building and new structures. But you know, what's important about a center like this in this region is really helping to raise the quality of life for those here in central Indiana by creating a hub where creative and creative activities can occur, where we can bring in major artists and major, you know, world-class musicians, et cetera, as well as create a home so that a home for the resident companies who are also a part of the center. So, I mean, going back to that, we are hopefully adding a lot of value to this center, this central Indiana area for the arts, building capacity for these resident companies to have a place of their own so that they're not worried about where they're going to do their things and how, you know, we're also helping them with their operational, the ticket support. You can go to the ticket office and get tickets to go to these performances. So we're building capacity for more of our homegrown arts segment. And we're excited to be able to do that.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join this conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send a question or comment via email at nolimits, that's one word, at WFYI.org, or send us comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've talked a bit about the center, and you talked about the things that it's going to bring to central Indiana and the opportunities for artists of national renown and also local organizations. We probably would be remiss if we didn't talk a bit about the funding. You know, how large a project is this, and where does the money come from?
Well, the building or the center itself, we're talking three different performing spaces, is roughly in the area of $150 million. Now, that has grown significantly from that initial vision, that initial seed of an idea from $40 million on up. And the reason for that is because the scope of the project has changed and morphed over these last, you know, 10, 15 years. So the funding itself, I would say that a significant portion of the cost of the center is being financed through the Carmel Redevelopment Commission and the tax increment financing revenue gained from local businesses benefiting from the Carmel City Center, which is a part of that area where the Palladium and the center exists.
Can we make we've talked a little bit, and Dave Lawrence, you've talked about how the Ballard administration has made the arts priority, and you've seen a budget increase for the first time in 6 or 7 years. Clearly, throwing down $150 million in Carmel has to be part of some sort of economic redevelopment strategy as well. What do the arts bring to a community, and are we providing enough support for them? In terms of government support, should it be more? And don't worry, Lewis, Ricky, I am going to pull you into this conversation too.
Okay.
Okay. But how about if we start with Dave Lawrence?
If you think in terms of, we can look at several different ways that what the arts bring to the community. First and foremost, they bring economic development. This is one of the things to which the mayor and the city council have found a lot of benefit about the arts. If you think about incremental spending around an arts experience, if someone is coming downtown to see the symphony at the Hilbert Circle Theater, they might be having dinner beforehand, paying for sitters at home, going out for a drink afterwards. Any of those things, that incremental spending is captured for Marion County, and it's another benefit. We're also paying artists and administrators to work in these facilities, anywhere from costume designers and sound technicians to ticket takers and box office personnel and dancers on the stage, et cetera. So that's another economic benefit of the arts, is we're actually, you know, the state and the city are collecting income tax from these folks as well. The arts also have a tremendous benefit in education, and I know this is something that Carol can speak a lot to, but there have been numerous studies done, and Carol can probably speak a lot more eloquently about this than I can, but just the value that the arts have in education and the way that they are able to help shape young minds. They do a lot also with helping build self-esteem and conflict resolution. So as we look about the arts as an answer to public safety issues that we have in our community, they can certainly be a benefit in helping address those issues. The arts also, something that's closest to my heart, the arts are important just for art's sake at times. We need them to beautify our streetscapes. We need them to enliven our lives. They are also, you know, when there's times of celebration or times of mourning, the arts are a way that we can all gather as a community. So they're community building, and we need them just because art enhances our lives. They're also very important for quality of life and attracting businesses and creative thinkers and, you know, the whole concept of the creative class and bringing that next generation of big thinkers to the city is an important thing that's why the arts are important to our city, is to be able to use them as a attraction for businesses to relocate here, families to relocate here, just grow the city as a whole.
Louis Rickey of the Indiana Arts Commission, what do the arts bring to the state?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with everything that Dave has said, so I don't want to reiterate those things. The other thing that I think that is very important about the arts is that it brings an identity to the people of a state. It's part of what you are, what you see yourself to be, what you aspire to be, it's part of what's ingrained in the psyche and the history of the state. It's part of what we believe we are as Americans, as Hoosiers, and I don't think you can underestimate the value of that in crystallizing for people an identity, and also encouraging and facilitating understanding among the people of the state. The arts do a tremendous amount to bring people of diverse backgrounds, ages, experiences together in a common experience and a common understanding. So I agree with Dave wholeheartedly. In addition to the economic driver that the arts are, which is very real, I mean, we're sitting here talking about Carmel, and that's a great example of a community that sees it as obviously not only a piece of identity for the community of Carmel, but a significant employer and a significant economic driver for the future of that community. Beyond the economic realities of what the arts bring, there is that quality of life, the part of the identity for the people, and the value of them in themselves, which Dave also expressed, which is really so vitally important for a community, for a state, for a people.
If I can say one more thing, I agree with Lewis's point about identity. I think that's absolutely critical. Another thing, we're really fortunate in the beginning of 2011, the Indiana Convention Center expansion will open, and all the development downtown with the JW Marriott and all of that. And the good folks at the ICVA, our partners on many different initiatives, really are also looking at the arts to help drive convention business here. I hope I get the statistic right, but with the expansion, when that opens, we will jump up to the 13th largest convention city in the country. And with that means we've all got to do a lot of work in the community to attract conventions here, because that's economic development too, and the arts are key to that. When conventions are trying to come to a city, they want to see that there's a lot of activity and livelihood in the city that folks can participate in. So that's another key thing that the arts can do for our community as well.
We've gotten a couple of questions via Twitter and Facebook that I'm going to take right now. One, I'm going to try to read this just verbatim because I don't think I can improve on it or compress it. It's from Danielle Hurt Hartman. What is sad in this culture is that people will drop $200 for a ticket to a Colts game, but complain about paying $30 for a ticket to a quality live arts event. Do they think we should do our art for free for them? Funding is important, but culture needs to change in order for the arts to be truly appreciated. I am a performer and voice teacher, scrolling down here, and I have to struggle to get people to see the importance of paying for live arts events. Is there a case of misplaced priorities here in this state, or I think she's talking generally about culture in the United States? Dave Lawrence is nodding his head emphatically with that one. Do you want to take the first whack at it?
And then I will.
Throw it to Carol.
I will. I think it's an easy trap to fall into for us to pit art versus sport. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need in our city and our community and our culture is both. Mm-hmm. But what I think, what Danielle's point is, and it's so well made, is for some reason the arts are not held as important in the community psyche as sports are. And I don't know if, you know, that's obviously has to do with the NFL and the NBA and all these other things, which, you know, and we're so fortunate to have the NCAA and the Indiana Sports Corporation does such a great job bringing events here to Indianapolis, which are critical. But I think what we're missing is the importance that just as much as these athletes are talented, so are these singers, so are these dancers, so are these performers. It takes just as much physical dexterity and training to do what those folks do as it does for an athlete to do their job. And I think it goes back to, you know, our funding and our education. We are seeing that arts education programs are being cut from schools left and right. And so how can kids understand and get involved in the arts if they're not exposed to it at a young age? We're not cutting physical education programs for schools. We're cutting arts programs first and foremost. So kids aren't introduced to them early enough, getting familiar with them, and that sort of, I think, lives with them. So folks are more familiar with sports. They get it in a way that they aren't with the arts. And that fundamentally needs to change in the way we're funding arts, the way we're teaching about the arts, the way we're teaching our children, and the way that we embrace them as a culture and as a community.
Carol Baker.
I just will make this quick. I think in addition to what Dave mentions is creating equity and access to the arts as well, because I think that's a big problem that we run into as well with students not getting access, young people not getting access to arts experiences, arts education.
We've gotten another tweet from Otis, who's wondering, are jazz, blues, and Latino music considered as art, and are they supported by the arts community?
Amen.
Amen.
Yes, they are the arts, my friend. We have this incredible jazz roots series that we're promoting at the center this season. We've got an incredible history here in Indianapolis and in the region for producing some great jazz artists happening in the at the professional level and avocational level. It's most definitely a part of the arts.
I'd like to invite our listeners to continue joining this conversation by sending us comments or questions via Facebook and Twitter at WFYI. You also can call us toll free at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. We're going to talk a little bit more. I'd like to talk, it seems like Danielle's question in particular hits on something that is pertinent, and what I'd like to talk a little bit more about, let you sort of gather your thoughts on this, is what other things could we do to sustain the arts? We've talked about the education piece. Whether there is a strategy comprehensively in this state to build appreciation and understanding for the arts. That's what we're going to talk about next. You are listening to No Limits here on WFYI. I'm John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and we will be talking with Louis Rickey, Executive Director of the Indiana Arts Commission, Dave Lawrence, President and CEO, Arts Council of Indianapolis, Carol Baker, Director of Educational Outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Terry Lee Honda, allowing visitors to experience Hondas at the new facility in Avon and online. Visitors can build their own Hondas, schedule appointments, and get quotes. More at terryleehonda.com. And by Green Bean Delivery, bringing organic produce and natural groceries to the greater Indianapolis area with a variety of products from Indiana farmers and artisans. You can customize your orders online and receive groceries at your home or office. More at greenbeandelivery.com. You're tuned to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM for your information. WFYI Radio is online. Follow us on Facebook or at Twitter at WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about the state of the arts in central Indiana. We're talking with Louis Rickey, Executive Director of the Indiana Arts Commission, Dave Lawrence, President and CEO, Arts Council of Indianapolis, Carol Baker, who is the Director of Educational Outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. We were talking right before the break about really, based on a question from a listener, Danielle, about what it is in the culture that doesn't seem to value the arts as much as sports. Dave Lawrence said that really that's a false choice. We shouldn't get pushed into choosing one or the other when a healthy community needs both. But it also strikes me that you look at the disparity, perhaps, in funding for programs. Are we doing enough for the arts? Is there a way that we could integrate things, support for the arts, in a more systemic way, starting with the schools and with public education? And I think that's probably a question that fits most into Louis Rickey's wheelhouse. Louis, could you take a stab at that one?
Well, I was straining to hear you, but I think I've got the gist of it. I think if we are going to have the kind of creative return, I think that we want to see in our state, in our society, creative thinkers that go out and are successful not only in the arts but in every aspect of business and commerce and science, etc. You know, we're going to have to get back to a strategy where we are investing in creative people and developing creative people. And I think the arts are at the heart of that from an educational standpoint. You know, the great thing about our state and our country, and I think a lot of the success that we've had over time is directly related to the fact that we have been a source of creative thinking for the world. Other people have taken our ideas and develop them, and we have done the same thing, and it has produced, you know, wealth and prosperity and a quality of life for ourselves that, you know, that we identify with and we want to continue to have. You know, we have to get back to the point that we are investing in a decisive, deliberate way in creating creative people in our state and in our society. That will be the thinkers and the doers that will create the kind of life that we want to continue to have in our state and our nation. And I think that the arts are at the very heart of that, because the arts help people synthesize creative thinking at a focal point and develop competencies that translate into every area of success for people. And so I think you hit it right on the head when you say that, you know, we have to reinvest educationally in developing creativity and developing the arts within our schools as a vehicle, not only for their own value, but because of the value that they add to the educational system and the well-roundedness and the abilities of the people that are produced by our educational system.
Let me reframe the question ever so slightly, and I'll throw it back to Dave Lawrence. But it strikes me, I'm an old political reporter, worked for years as a newspaper and watched school systems deal with funding crises. They cut arts and music programs when they want to meet the budget. They start looking at cutting high school football when they want people to storm the state house. What is it, what can we do to arouse the same sort of passion that people do have for, say, high school athletic programs to see that art and music stay as part of the curriculum?
Well, that is the $64,000 question.
Probably a little more than that, actually.
Yeah, I would hope so. I think that what we have to do from a very early age is make the arts just as much of a priority as sports are. We need to invest more money in our school systems, particularly around arts education. We need to invest in arts organizations that are providing after-school enrichment programs for the arts. We need to invest as a community in arts organizations and art activities and placemaking initiatives that are creating opportunities for involvement in the arts. We also need to make sure that when we're talking at the city government level and the state government level and federal government level, that it isn't a choice of potholes and sewers versus the arts, that the arts are not seen as something that is unnecessary or irrelevant to our society. And we all have to make these changes. We've got to shake off the old patterns. We're working very hard in Indianapolis about how can we try to raise the visibility of the arts in Indianapolis to sort of address some of these questions. The educational question obviously is bigger than what we're able to tackle alone, but what if there was, and we've started a campaign called Be Independent, mm-hmm. I-N-D-Y, which is let's support local artists. What if everybody in Indianapolis or those arts patrons that like to go to First Friday events or out in the gallery scene and all that, what if everybody just bought one piece a year? If everybody just committed themselves, even if it's a $100 pot or, you know, a $100 painting or something like that, if everybody did that, think about not only the impact that would have on those artists that are now, you know, making more and selling more art, but also on beautifying our homes and our communities and our streets. But also then getting back to Lewis's point about helping further that identity about what makes Hoosier artists Hoosiers, what makes us as Marion County residents so supportive of you know, the arts and who we are as a people. We have got to do everything in our power to shake off those old habits. And I really believe that it starts with education, and it also starts with just making the arts part of the habit of our everyday lives.
Carol Baker, I'm going to pull a caller in.
I wanted to add just something to what David said and address something he said in an earlier segment, that the reason why, well, he had said earlier that artists have a hard time promoting themselves. They're really good at doing their craft, but they need that extra push. And I think that kind of goes along with arts programming in the schools, is that we figured out how to get people all riled up about sports. We just need to figure out how to, you know, also get that same spirit, you know, school spirit around what's happening in the arts programmings in the school. And, you know, frankly, it's one of those things that's on the chopping block in schools, is because, you know, ultimately schools are getting, they're getting demands from so many different areas. It's really hard to address everything. So they have to look at what's being tested, what's going to get them that money from the federal government when they meet AYP and et cetera. This is what they're concerned about.
You know, a couple of years back, there was a group of visiting dignitaries from China here in Indianapolis, brought by the Indianapolis Arts Center, and they were people from education and from economic development that had come over, and we sort of did a roundtable with them that we organized, and it was interesting to hear what they said. You know, of course, China is the fastest developing economy in the world. And they have deliberately required and embedded arts education in every level of education in a student in China. So in elementary, middle school, or the equivalent high school and college level, there are now arts requirements. And they expressed to us, they said, listen, you don't understand. You are surrounded in America by art. It's in the design of your clothes. It's in the design of your buildings. It's what happens over your radio waves. We in China have lived you know, decades with really out any creative expression. And we realized if we're going to be a competitive global economy, we have to train our people in the arts or we will never be globally competitive. I think we in America have begun to lose sight of what has really given us the competitive edge, which is our creativity, and therefore, you know, in schools and in other realms, the arts have been devalued, and I think it's time that we, you know, we reposition it in the valuable place that it really holds in our history and what has really propelled us as a society and as a civilization. I think others realize that and recognize that we do less sometimes, and I think that you know, those of us that are closest to the source have to be out there helping to change those mindsets in our communities, in our state, in our nation, because it really is a crucial part of who we are and our future success.
I'd like to pull a caller in, Joe. You're calling from Indianapolis. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Thank you for calling the program. I understand you got a question about independent filmmakers.
Yeah, I'm an independent filmmaker here in Indianapolis, and I think one of the biggest problems that we have, and there is tons of fantastic filmmakers in Indianapolis that just have cameras that shoot every day and try to get their project out there to see by the public. And I think most of the problems that we have as filmmakers is changing that perception that what is a fun experience, that you don't need to go and see a multi-million-dollar film to have a fun experience. You can go out and support your local filmmakers and support these local artists and still have just as much fun as you would go and see the big-budget film. But I guess what the question is how do we change that public perception of what is fun? I mean, I think we come from a culture that is so overwhelmed with this, the more money it takes to create something, the better it must be.
Well, we'll take that. Dave Lawrence, you want to take that one? Thank you for the question, Joe.
Mm-hmm. First off, he's absolutely right. We've got some wonderful independent filmmakers here in Indianapolis, and more power to you. Get out there and create even more stuff. It's great. I think that what we have to do, what the arts community has to do, and here's what we're tasked with, is keep the arts relevant. You know, we can talk all we want to about the lack of funding and nobody's coming to my performances and all of that, but we sometimes fail to ask that central question, is what we're doing good? Is what we're doing something that people will pay attention to or enjoy or want to see? And, you know, this goes back to the earlier point I made just about the clutter that's out there right now with competing, you know, with everything, internet, movies, all that stuff that's out there. I think that what we need to do is make relevant arts experiences. The caller is absolutely right. The arts can and are fun, and you can have an enjoyable experience, but we've got to make it relevant to today's audiences. And there are fantastic examples here locally that organizations are doing what they can to make the arts relevant to their audiences, to bring in new audiences, to diversify their audiences even further. It's a question of relevancy, and that is something that the arts community can't sit on its laurels. We need to actively work towards making sure that what we're doing is relevant to our audiences.
We've got a question from Patricia on Facebook. Patricia Castaneda, I hope I pronounced that right. When does art displayed publicly stop belonging to the people because it is privately funded? Does the public have a voice in deciding what is appropriate or not? Louis Rickey, I'll throw that one to you.
If you could repeat that, I caught only a part of it.
Sure,
I'm sorry.
Sure. I'll try to speak up. It is, when does art publicly displayed stop belonging to the people because it is privately funded? Does the public have a voice in deciding what is appropriate or not?
Well, first of all, I think public art is an incredibly valuable thing because, for instance, the Arts Council of Indianapolis has done a lot of work in public art in the city of Indianapolis, and I've talked to a lot of people about it. Other communities around the state have done also. Columbus, Indiana, is a great example of architecture and art, both publicly and privately funded. Terre Haute has a very good public art program. The real value of public art is that everybody does bring something to it because it's there for everyone to encounter. Now, that doesn't mean that you always agree with it or like it or not like it. It elicits a response from you, and it makes you think. It interacts with you by the virtue of the fact that it is there. And I think that's a great thing for a society because it builds dialogue, it builds interaction. It brings people together around a point. People may have different opinions about public art, but the great thing about it is it does elicit those opinions from people, and it is a point of community then where people come together. I think public art, even if it's funded privately, belongs to people because it is public and it is there. Its purpose is for people to encounter it and to have an opinion about it. So, you know, I would say to the caller, public art always belongs to the person who comes to it, and I think that's the great thing about it.
Dave Lawrence.
I think, too, Lewis is exactly right. I mean, the true benefit of public art is the discussion and the conversation that pieces elicit. I think that the most successful pieces of public art are those that involve community in the process of making the art, the process of selecting the site for the art, the process of talking about how the community is either owning it, involved in the design, or if it's tied to the community, creating that sense of place. And I think that that's really where the true value of public art lies, in those processes and those projects that involve community and let truly the voices of the community heard in its development.
We're going to take another call. Karen, we've got just a little bit more than a minute left, so if you can make your question
a
quick one. Thank you for calling.
I was just wanting somebody to address the chasm between for-profit art and non-for-profit art in our community. And that when somebody called and asked about Latino and jazz and blues music, jazz was addressed because jazz and classical are considered music within the arts community. And yet because the other music forms are done in for-profit venues, they're not considered a part of the arts community. We could increase our numbers incredibly if we merged both communities because all artists are for-profit because they all need to eat.
Thanks for the call and the question, Dave Lawrence.
She's absolutely right. The lines are blurring, and we need to be more entrepreneurial in our thinking about how we fund the arts and support the arts. We've gotten, you know, trapped in these grant processes and all of that across all lines, and we really need to think about that there are artists out there working in the for-profit realm that can be supported in the same way, and, you know, the line is blurred, and we really need to think about for-profit and non-profit just about the arts and the creative community.
Well, I think we.
I'd also remind the caller that that jazz obviously.
Lewis, we got about 10 seconds.
Started in America as certainly a for-profit endeavor, was America's popular music, and only in recent history has it been more in the not-for-profit realm than in the for-profit realm. But
I want to apologize to all the listeners who've called in and sent messages that we couldn't get on the air. We clearly have to continue this conversation another time because of the interest. I want to thank my guests, Lewis Rickey, Executive Director, Indiana Arts Commission. Lewis, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dave Lawrence, President and CEO, Arts Council of Indianapolis. Carol Baker, Director of Educational Outreach, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board Engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. And Intern, Savannah Rains. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.